towering white turrets behind them.
Sure, there'll be a nice roast stag, maybe even a sprinkle of salt, but you've got to hang with the clergy. And whose idea of a party is that?
Luce glanced back at the fairy tale castle. That was where Daniel lived? Was he inside those walls now?
Or, Bill continued, he can slum it at the real party out on the green tonight, for that less respectable sort of folk, where the ale flows like wine and the wine flows like ale. There'll be dancing, dining, and, most importantly, wenching.
Wenching? Bill waved one tiny hand in the air.
Nothing you have to worry about, darling. Daniel only has eyes for one wench in all of creation. I mean, you.
Wench, Luce said, looking down at her rough-spun cotton garments.
There's a certain lost wench,
Bill elbowed Luce,
who will be there at the fair, scanning the crowd through the eye-holes of her painted mask for her hunky dreamboat.
He patted her cheek.
Doesn't that sound like a great time, little sister?
I'm not here to have fun, Bill.
Try it out for one night. Who knows, you might enjoy it. Most people do.
Luce swallowed. But what will happen when he finds me? What am I supposed to learn before I burn up? Before...
Whoa, there, Bill cried. Slow down, hothead. I told you, tonight's just about fun. A little bit of romance. A night off,
he winked.
For both of us.
What about the curse? How can I drop everything and celebrate Valentine's Day? Bill didn't respond immediately. Instead, he paused thoughtfully, then said,
What if I told you that this, tonight, is the only Valentine's Day you kids ever got to spend together?
The words struck Luce immediately. Ever? We never got to celebrate Valentine's Day? Bill shook his head.
After today? No.
Luce thought back to her days at Dover, how she and Callie would watch some of the other girls get chocolate hearts and roses on Valentine's Day. They'd made a tradition of lamenting how very, very single they were over strawberry milkshakes at the local diner. They'd spend hours conjecturing on the slim odds of ever having a date on Valentine's Day. She laughed. She hadn't been far off. Luce had never had a Valentine's Day with Daniel. Now Bill was telling her that she only ever had tonight. Luce's quest through the announcers, all her efforts to break the curse and discover what lay behind all of her reincarnations, finding an end to this endless cycle. Yes, those were important. Of course they were. But would the world end if she enjoyed this one time with Daniel? She cocked her head at Bill. Why are you doing this for me? She asked. Bill shrugged.
I have a heart, a soft spot for...
What, Valentine's Day? Why don't I buy that?
Even I once loved and lost.
And for the briefest of moments, it seemed the gargoyle looked wistful and sad. He stared right at her and sniffled. Luce gave a laugh. Okay, she said. I'll stay. Just for tonight.
Good.
Bill popped up and pointed a crooked claw down the alley.
Now go. Make merry.
He squinted.
Actually, change your dress. Then make merry.
2. A soul at odds. Hours later, Luce leaned her elbows on the sill of the small, stone casement window. The village looked different from the second-story perch, a maze of interconnected stone buildings, thatched roofs angled here and there, and something like a medieval apartment complex. By late that afternoon, many of the windows, including the one Luce leaned out of, were draped with deep green vines of ivy, or dense boughs of holly that had been woven into wreaths. They were signs of the fair taking place outside the city that evening. Valentine's Day, Luce thought. She could feel Lucinda dreading it. After Bill had disappeared outside the castle for his mysterious night off, things had happened very quickly. She'd wandered alone through the city until a girl a few years older than her appeared from nowhere to whisk Luce up a flight of dank stairs into the small two-roomed house.
"Draw away from the window, sister," a high voice called across the room. "You're letting in St. Valentine's draught."
The girl was Helen, Lucinda's older sister, and the smoky, confining two-roomed house was where she and her family lived. The chamber's gray walls were bare, and the only furniture consisted of a wooden bench, a trestle table, and the stack of family sleeping pallets. The floor was strewn with rough straw and sprinkled with lavender, a meager attempt to clear the air of the foul smell from the tallow candles they had to use for light.
"In a moment," Luce called back.
The tiny window was the only place she didn't feel claustrophobic. Down the alley to the right was the marketplace she'd glimpsed before, and if she leaned out far enough, she could see a sliver of the white stone castle. It haunted Lucinda, that tiniest tease of a view. Luce sensed this through the soul they shared, because on the evening of the day Lucinda first met Daniel in the rose garden, she'd come home and, coincidentally, seen him peering pensively out of the tallest tower casement. Since then, she watched for him every chance she got, but he never appeared again. Another voice whispered,
"What does she stare at for so long? What could possibly be so interesting?" "The good Lord only knows," Helen replied, sighing. "My sister is laden with dreams."
Luce turned around slowly. Her body had never felt so strange. The part that belonged to medieval Lucinda was wilted and lethargic, flattened by the love she was certain she had lost. The part that belonged to Lucinda Price was holding fast to the idea that there might still be a chance. It was a struggle to perform the simplest of tasks, like conversing with the three girls standing before her, alarmed expressions twisting their pretty faces. The tallest one, in the middle, was Helen, Lucinda's only sister and the oldest of five children in their family. She was newly a wife, and, as if to prove it, her thick blonde hair was divided into two braids and pinned in a matronly chignon. At Helen's side was Laura, their young neighbor, who Luce realized was the girl she'd overheard the two women gossiping about over the clothesline. Though Laura was only 12, she was alluringly beautiful, blonde, with large blue eyes and a loud, saucy laugh that could be heard across the city. Luce bit back a laugh, trying to reconcile Laura's mother's protectiveness with what Lucinda knew of the girl's own experience, pressing palms with the page boys in the cool recesses of the Lord's Wood. What Luce gleaned from Lucinda's memories of Laura reminded her of Arion. Laura, like the angel, was easy to love. Then there was Eleanor, Lucinda's oldest, closest friend. They'd grown up wearing one another's clothes, like sisters. They bickered like sisters, too. Eleanor had a blunt edge, often slicing dreamy Lucinda's reveries in two with a cutting remark. But she had a skill for bringing Lucinda back to reality, and she loved Lucinda deeply. It wasn't, Luce realized, so different from her present-day relationship with Shelby.
"Well?" Eleanor asked.
"Well, what?" Lucinda said, startled.
"Don't all stare at me at once."
"We've only asked you three times which mask you're going to wear tonight."
Eleanor waved three brightly colored masks in Lucinda's face.
"Pray, end the suspense."
They were simple leather domino masks, made to cover just the eyes and nose and tie around the back of the head with thin silk ribbon. All three were covered in the same coarse fabric, but each had been painted with a different design. One red, with small black pansies, one green, with delicate white blossoms, and one ivory, with pale pink roses near the eyes.
She stares as if she's not seen these same masks every one of her past 5 years of masquerading, Eleanor murmured to Helen.
She has the gift of seeing old things anew, Helen said.
Luce shivered, though the room was warmer than it had been for most of the winter months. In exchange for the eggs the citizens had offered as gifts to the Lord, he'd repaid each household with a small bundle of cedar firewood. So the hearth was bright and cheery, giving a healthy flush to the girls' cheeks. Daniel had been the knight tasked with collecting the eggs and distributing the firewood. He'd stridden through the door with purpose, then staggered back when he saw Lucinda inside. It was the last time medieval Lucinda had seen him, and after months of stolen moments together in the forest, Lucy's past self was certain she would never see Daniel again.
But why? Luce wondered now.
Luce felt Lucinda's shame at her family's meager accommodations, but that didn't seem right. Daniel wouldn't care that Lucinda was a peasant's daughter. He knew that she was always and ever much more than that. There had to be something else. Something Lucinda was too sad to see clearly. But Luce could help her. Find Daniel, win him back, at least for as long as she still had to live.
I like the ivory one for you, Lucinda, Dora prompted, trying to be helpful.
But Luce could not make herself care about the masks.
Oh, any of them will be fine. Perhaps the ivory to match my gown.
She tugged dully at the draped fabric of her worn wool dress. The girls erupted into laughter.
You're not going to wear that common market gown, Laura gasped. But we're all getting done up in our finest.
She collapsed dramatically across the wooden bench near the hearth.
Oh, I would never want to fall in love wearing my dreary Tuesday kirtle.
A memory pushed to the front of Luce's mind. Lucinda had disguised herself as a lady in her one fine gown and sneaked into the castle rose garden. That was where she first met Daniel in this life. That was why their romance felt like a betrayal from the beginning. Daniel had thought Lucinda something other than a peasant's daughter. That was why the thought of donning that fine red gown again and pretending to make merry at a festival was a staggering prospect to Lucinda. But Luce knew Daniel better than Lucinda did. If he had an opportunity to spend Valentine's Day with her, he would seize it. Of course, she could explain none of this inner turmoil to the girls. All she could do was turn away and subtly wipe her tears with the back of her wrist.
She looks as if love has already found and dealt roughly with her, Helen murmured under her breath.
I say, if love is rough with you, be rough with love, Eleanor said in her bossy way. Stamp out sadness with dancing slippers.
Oh, Eleanor, Luce heard herself say. You wouldn't understand.
And you do understand, Eleanor laughed. You, the girl who wouldn't even put her name in Cupid's urn.
Oh, Lucinda,
Laura cupped her hands over her mouth.
Why not? I'd give anything if Mother would let me put my name in Cupid's urn.
Which is why I had to toss her name into the urn for her, Eleanor cried,
seizing the train of Luce's gown and pulling her around the room in a circle. After a chase that toppled the bench and the tallow candle on the casement ledge, Luce grabbed Eleanor's hand.
You didn't.
Oh, a little fun will do you good. I want you dancing tonight, high and lively with the rest of the maskers. Come now, help me choose a visor. Which color makes my nose look smaller, rose or green? Perhaps I shall trick a man into loving me yet.
Luce's cheeks were burning. Cupid's urn. How did that have anything to do with a Valentine's Day with Daniel? Before she could speak, out came Lucinda's party dress, a floor-length gown of red wool adorned with a narrow collar made of otter fur. It was cut lower across the chest than anything Luce would wear back home in Georgia. If Bill were here to see her, he would probably grunt a hubba hubba in her ear. Luce sat still, while Helen's fingers wove a stem of holly berries into her loose black hair. She was thinking of Daniel, the way his eyes had lit up in the rose garden when he first approached Lucinda. A rapping startled them all. In the doorway, a woman's face appeared. Luce recognized her instantly as Lucinda's mother. Without thinking, she ran into the safe warmth of her mother's arms. They closed around her shoulders, tight and affectionate. It was the first of the lives Luce had visited, where she felt a strong connection with her mother. It made her feel blissful and homesick all at once. Back home in Thunderbolt, Georgia, Luce tried to act mature and self-sufficient as often as she could. Lucinda was just the same, Luce realized. But at times like this, when heartbreak made the whole world cheerless, nothing would do but the comfort of a mother's embrace.
"My daughters, so fine and grown up, you make me feel older than I am."
Their mother laughed as she ran her fingers through Luce's hair. She had kind, hazel eyes and a soft, expressive brow.
"Oh, mother," Luce said, with her cheek against her mother's shoulder. She was thinking of Doreen Price and trying not to cry.
"Mother, tell us again how you met Father at the Valentine's Fair," Helen said.
"Not that old tale again,"
their mother groaned, but the girls could see the story forming in her eyes already.
"Yes, yes," the girls all chanted. "Why, I was younger than Lucinda when I was a mother maid," her willowy voice began. "My own mother bade me wear the mask she'd worn years before. She gave me this advice on my way out the door. Smile, child. Men like a happy maid. Seek happy nights to happy days."
As her mother dove into her tale of love, Luce found her eyes creeping back toward the casement, imagining the turrets of the castle, the vision of Daniel looking out. Looking for her? After her story was done, her mother drew something from the pocket strung around her waist and handed it to Luce with a mischievous wink.
"For you,"
she whispered. It was a small cloth package tied with twine. Luce went to the window and carefully unwrapped it. Her fingers trembled as she loosened the twine. Inside was a lacy, heart-shaped doily about the size of her fist. Someone had inscribed these words with what looked to Luce like a blue Bic pen. "Roses are red, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, and so are you. I will look for you tonight. Love, Daniel." Luce almost sputtered with laughter. This was something the Daniel she knew would never write. Clearly, someone else had been behind it. Bill? But to the part of Luce that was Lucinda, the words were a chaos of scribbles. She couldn't read, Luce realized. And yet, once the meaning of the poem was processed by Luce, she could feel an understanding break open in Lucinda. Her past self found this the freshest, most captivating poetry ever known. She would go to the festival, and she would find Daniel. She would show Lucinda how powerful their love could be. Tonight, there would be dancing. Tonight, there would be magic in the air, and, even if it was the only time it ever happened in the long history of Daniel and Lucinda, tonight there would be the particular joy of spending Valentine's Day with the one she loved. 3. Delight in Disorder.
"Eleanor!"
Luce shouted over a dense crowd of dancers as her friend bounced past in the spirited line of a jig. But Eleanor didn't hear her. It was hard to say whether Luce's voice was drowned out by the delighted hoots of a crowd at a puppet show in one of the movable stages set up on the western edge of the dancing area for the raucous, hungry crowd lining up at the long food tables on the eastern side of the green. Or maybe it was just the sea of dancers in the middle, who bounded, twirled, and spun with reckless, romantic abandon. It seemed as though the dancers at the Valentine's Fair were not just dancing, but also hollering, laughing, belting out verses to the troubadour's music, and hollering to friends across the muddy dance area. They were doing it all at once, and all at the top of their lungs. Eleanor was out of earshot, spinning as she stamped out dance steps all the way across the oak-ringed green. Luce had no choice but to turn back to her clumsy partner and curtsy. He was a spindly, older man with sallow cheeks and ill-fitting lips, whose slouched shoulders made him look like he wanted to hide behind his too small lynx face mask. And yet Lucinda didn't care. She couldn't remember ever having had this much fun dancing. They'd been dancing since the sun kissed the horizon. Now the stars shone like armor in the sky. There were always so many stars in past skies. The night was chilly, but Luce's face was flushed, and her forehead was damp with perspiration. As the song neared its end, she thanked her partner and sidled between a line of dancers, eager to get away. Because, despite the joys of dancing under the stars, Luce hadn't forgotten about the real reason she was here. She looked out across the green and worried that even if Daniel was somewhere out there, she might never find him. Four troubadours dressed in motley gathered on a wobbly dais at the northern edge of the green, plucking on lutes and lyres to play a song as sweet as a Beatles ballad. At a high school dance, these slow songs were the ones that made the single girls, including Luce, a little anxious. But here, the moves were built into the songs, and no one was ever at a loss for a partner. You just grabbed the nearest warm body, for better or for worse, and you danced. A skipping jig for this one, a circling dance in groups of eight for another. Luce felt Lucinda knowing some of the moves innately. The rest of them were easy to pick up. If only Daniel were here. Luce withdrew to the edge of the green, taking a break. She studied the women's dresses. By modern standards, they weren't fancy, but the women wore them with such pride that the dresses seemed as elegant as any of the fine gowns she'd seen at Versailles. Many were made of wool. A few had linen or cotton accents sewn into a collar or a hem. Most people in the city only owned one pair of shoes, so worn leather boots abounded. But Luce quickly realized how much easier it was to dance in them than in high-heeled shoes that pinched her feet. The men managed to look dapper in their best breeches. Most wore a long wool tunic on top for warmth. Hoods were tossed back over their shoulders. The weather that night was above freezing, almost mild. Most of their leather masks were painted to mimic the faces of forest animals, complementing the floral designs of the ladies' masks. A few men wore gloves, which looked expensive. But most of the hands Luce touched that night were cold and chapped and red. Cats stared from dirt roads around the green. Dogs searched for their owners among the mess of bodies. The air smelled like pine and sweat and beeswax candles and the sweet musk of fresh-baked gingerbread. As the next song wound down, Luce spotted Eleanor, who seemed happy to be plucked from the arm of a boy whose red mask was painted like a fox's face. "Where's Laura?" Eleanor pointed toward a stand of trees, where their young friend leaned close to a boy they didn't recognize, whispering something. He was showing her a book, gesturing in the air. It looked like he took a great deal of care with his hair. He wore a mask made to resemble a rabbit's face. The girls shared a giggle as they made their way through the crowd. There was Helen, sitting with her husband on a wool blanket spread out on the grass. They were sharing a wooden cup of steaming cider and laughing easily about something, which made Luce miss Daniel all over again. There were lovers everywhere. Even Lucinda's parents had turned out for the fair. Her father's wiry white beard scraped her mother's cheek as they sashayed around the green. Luce sighed and fingered the lace doily in her pocket. "Roses are red, violets are blue. If Daniel didn't write these words, then who?" The last time she'd received a note, allegedly from Daniel, it had been a trap set by the outcasts. And Cam had saved her. Heat rose on the back of her neck. Was this a trap? Bill had said it was just a Valentine's party. He'd put so much energy into helping her in her quest already. He wouldn't have left her alone like this if there had been any real danger. Right? Luce shook the thought away. Bill had said Daniel would be here, and Luce believed him. But the weight was killing her. She followed Eleanor toward a long table, where plates and bowls of casual, potluck-style food had been set out. There were sliced duck served over cabbage, whole hares that had been roasted on spits, cauldrons of baby cauliflowers with a bright orange sauce, high-piled platters of apples, pears, and dried currants harvested from the surrounding forests, and a whole long wooden table filled with misshapen, half-burned pies of meat and fruit. She watched a man loosen a flat knife from a strap slung around his waist and cut himself a hefty slice of pie. On her way out the door that evening, Lucy's mother had handed her a shallow wooden spoon, which she had threaded through a wool tie around her waist. These people were prepared for eating, fixing, and fighting, the way Luce was prepared for love. Eleanor reappeared at Luce's side and held a bowl of porridge under her nose.
"Gooseberry jam on top," Eleanor said. "Your favorite."
When Luce dipped her spoon into the thick concoction, a savory aroma wafted up and made her mouth water. It was hot and hearty and delicious, exactly what she needed to revive her for another dance. Before she realized it, she'd eaten it all. Eleanor glanced down at the empty bowl, surprised.
"Danced up an appetite, did you?"
Luce nodded, feeling warm and satisfied. Then she noticed two brown-robed clergymen sitting apart from the crowd on a wooden bench beneath an elm tree. Neither was taking part in the festivities. In fact, they looked more like chaperones than revelers. But the younger one moved his feet in time with the rhythm, while the other, who had a shriveled-looking face, glared darkly at the crowds.
"The Lord sees and hears this lewd debauchery perpetrated so near his house,"
the shriveled-faced man scoffed.
"And closer than that, even,"
the other clergyman laughed.
"Do you recall, Master Docket, just how much of the church's gold went toward his lordship's Valentine's banquet? Was it 20 gold pieces for that stag? These people's festivities cost nothing more than the energy to dance. And they dance like angels."
If only Luce could see her angel dancing toward her right now.
"Angels who sleep through tomorrow's working hours, mark my words, Master Herrick.
Can you not see the joy on these young faces?"
The younger vicar's eyes swept across the green, found Luce's at the edge of the lawn, and brightened. She found herself smiling back behind her mask, but her joy that evening would be vastly increased if she could be there in Daniel's arms. Otherwise, what was the point of taking this romantic night off? It seemed that Luce and the shrivel-faced vicar were the only two people here not relishing the masquerade. And generally, Luce loved a good party. But right now, all she wanted to do was pluck the masks off the face of every boy who passed. What if she'd already missed him in the crowd? How would she know if the Daniel of this era would even be looking for her? She stared so baldly at a tall, blonde boy, whose mask made him look like an eagle, that he bounded past the toy maker's stall and the puppet show to stand before her.
"Shall I introduce myself, or would you rather just keep staring?"
His teasing voice sounded neither familiar nor unfamiliar. For a moment, Luce held her breath. She imagined the ecstasy of his hands around her waist, the way he always dipped her backward to preface a kiss. She wanted to touch the place where his wings bloomed from his shoulders, the secret scar no one knew about but her. When she reached up to lift his mask, the boy grinned at her boldness. But his smile faded as quickly as Luce's did when she saw his face. He was perfectly good-looking. There was just one problem. He wasn't Daniel. And so every aspect of this boy, from his square nose to his strong jaw to his pure gray eyes, paled in comparison to the boy she had in mind. She let out a long, sad sigh. The boy couldn't hide his embarrassment. He fumbled for words, then slipped his mask back over his face, making Luce feel terrible.
"I'm sorry," she said, quickly backing away. "I mistook you for someone else."
Luckily, she backed into Laura, whose face, unlike Lucinda's, was cheery with the magic of the night.
"Oh, I hope they'll draw from Cupid's Ann soon," Laura whispered, bouncing on her heels and drawing Luce mercifully away from the Eagle Boy.
"Did you sneak your name in there after all?" Luce asked, finding a smile. Laura shook her head.
"Mother would slaughter me."
"Won't be much longer."
Eleanor appeared at their side. She looked nervous. She was confident about everything except boys.
"They draw at the toll of the next church bells to give the new sweethearts a chance to dance. Perhaps a kiss, if they're lucky."
The next church bells. To Luce, it seemed like the 8 o'clock bells had only just rung, but she was certain time must be flying faster than she realized. Was it already almost 9? Her time to be with Daniel was running out, fast, and standing around obsessively scanning the gallery of masks wasn't doing any good. No eyes glowed violet behind their visor. She had to act. Something told her she'd have better luck on the dance floor.
"Shall we dance again?" she asked the girls, pulling them back into the crowd.
The revelers had stamped the grass into mud. The musical arrangement had grown more intricate, a quick waltz, and the dances had changed too. Luce followed the light, fast steps, picking up the more complicated arm movements as she went along. Palm to palm with the gentleman in front of you, a simple curtsy, and then several skips in a wide circle around your partner to face the other side. Then a swap with a girl to your left. Then palm to palm with the next young man, and the whole thing was repeated. Halfway through the song, Luce was out of breath and giggling when she stopped in front of her new partner. Her feet suddenly felt welded to the mud. He was tall and slender, wearing a mask with leopard spots. The design was exotic to Lucinda. There were no leopards in the woods around her city. It was certainly the most elegant mask she'd seen at the party. The man extended his gloved hands, and when Luce slipped hers cautiously inside, his grip was firm, almost possessive. Behind the holes around the leopard's eyes, there came a gentle glow, as emerald green irises locked with hers. 4. Some consequence yet hanging in the stars.
"Good evening, lady. How nimbly you dance.
Like an angel."
Luce's lips parted to respond, but her voice caught in her throat. Why did Cam have to crash this party?
"Good evening, sir,"
Luce responded with a quiver in her voice. From all the dancing, her face was flushed, and her braids had tumbled loose, and one of the sleeves of her dress had slipped off her shoulder. She could feel Cam's gaze on her bare skin. She reached to right her sleeve, but his gloved hand crossed hers to stop her.
"Such sweet disorder in your dress."
He drew a finger across her collarbone, and she shivered.
"It inspires a man's imagination."
The song changed keys, a cue for the dancers to change partners. Cam's fingers lifted off her skin, but Luce's heart still pounded as they danced away from each other. She watched Cam from the corner of her eye. He was watching her. She knew, somehow, that this was not Cam from the present, chasing her backward through time. This was the Cam who lived and breathed in this medieval air. He was easily the most elegant dancer on the green. There was an ethereal quality to his steps that did not go unnoticed by the ladies. From the attention he was getting, Luce knew he was not from this city. He'd arrived specially to attend the Valentine's Fair. But why? Then they were paired again. Was she still dancing? Her body felt stiff and rigid. Even the music seemed to stutter in an endless in-between beat, which made Luce worry that she and Cam would have to stay rooted to these spots, staring into one another's eyes forever.
"Are you all right, sir?"
Luce hadn't expected to say that, but there was something strange in his expression. It was a darkness even his mask could not conceal. This was not the dark of evil doings, not the terrifying way he'd appeared in the cemetery at Sword and Cross. No, this Cam's soul was crippled by sorrow. What could make him look like that? His eyes narrowed, as if he had sensed her thoughts, and something in his face shifted.
"I have never been better."
Cam tilted his head.
"It's you I'm worried about, Lucinda."
"Me?" Luce tried hard not to show how he affected her. She wished for a different kind of mask altogether, an invisible one, which would prevent him from ever again thinking he knew how she felt. He raised his mask to his forehead.
"You're engaged in an impossible endeavor. You'll end up broken-hearted and alone. Unless..."
"Unless what?"
He shook his head.
"There is so much darkness in you, Lucinda."
The leopard mask lowered again.
"Come back around. Come back around."
His voice trailed off as he began to dance away. For once, Luce wasn't through with him.
"Wait!"
But Cam disappeared into the dance. He was striding in slow circles with a new partner, Laura. Cam murmured something in the innocent girl's ear, and she tossed back her head and laughed. Luce fumed. She wanted to jerk simple, bright Laura away from Cam's darkness. She wanted to grab Cam and force him to explain. She wanted to have a conversation on her terms, not at momentary, melodramatic intervals between jig steps in the middle of a public festival in the Middle Ages. There he was again, coming toward her in perfect control of the steps, as if influencing the tempo of the music. Luce couldn't have felt more out of control. Just when he was about to come before her again, a tall, blonde man, dressed entirely in black, deftly pushed him aside. He stood before her and made no pretense of dancing.
"Hello."
She sucked in her breath.
"Hello."
Tall, muscular, mysterious beyond all possibility. She would know him anywhere. She reached for him, desperate to feel some connection, to feel the sweetest flush at the touch of her true love's skin. Daniel. Just as the music was about to dictate that they change partners, it slowed, almost like magic, and morphed into something slow and beautiful. Flames from the candles positioned all around the fair flickered against the dark sky, and the entire world seemed to hold its breath. Luce stared into Daniel's eyes, and all the movement and colors around him faded away. She had found him. His arms came toward her, circling her waist, as her body melted into his, buzzing with the thrill of his touch. Then she was deep in Daniel's arms, and there was nothing so wonderful in all the world as dancing with her angel. Their feet kissed the ground with the lightness of their steps, and the flight was so obvious and innate in Daniel's body. She felt the buoyancy in her own heart, too, which she felt only when Daniel was near. There was nothing so wonderful, except maybe his kiss. Her lips parted in expectation, but Daniel just watched her, drinking her in with his eyes.
"I thought you'd never come," she said.
Luce thought about escaping through the announcers in her backyard, about chasing down her past lifetimes and watching them burn up, about the fights she and Daniel had had over keeping her safe and alive. Sometimes it was easy to forget how good they were together, how lovely he was, how kind, the way being with him made her feel like she was flying. Just looking at him made the tiny hairs in her arms stand up, made her stomach flip-flop with nervous energy. And that was nothing compared to what kissing him did to her. He raised his mask and held her so tightly against him she couldn't move. She didn't want to. She pored over every lovely feature of his face, her eyes lingering the longest on the soft curve of his lips. After all this build-up, she simply couldn't believe it. It was really him.
I will always come back to you.
His eyes held her in a trance.
Nothing can stop me.
Luce rose on her toes, desperate to kiss him, but Daniel pressed a finger to her lips and smiled.
Come with me,
he whispered, taking her hand. Daniel led her past the edge of the green, past the ring of oak trees that encircled the revelers. The high grass tickled her ankles, and the moon lit their way until they entered the chilly darkness of the forest. There, Daniel picked up a small glowing lantern, as if this was all part of his plan.
Where are we going? She asked,
though it didn't really matter, as long as they were together. Daniel just shook his head and smiled, holding out a hand to help her hop over a fallen branch blocking the path. As they walked, the music faded, until it was hard to discern, mingling with the low hooting of owls, the rustling of squirrels in tree branches, and the soft song of the nightingale. The lantern rocked on Daniel's arm, and the light wobbled, reaching for the web of bare branches curling out toward them. Once, Luce would have been nervous about the shadows in the forest, but that seemed like millennia ago. As they walked, hand in hand, Luce's and Daniel's feet traced a narrow pebble path. The night grew colder, and she leaned close to him for warmth, burrowing deep into the arms he wrapped around her. When they arrived at a fork in the path, Daniel paused for a moment, almost as if he'd lost his way. Then he turned to face her.
I should explain, he said. I owe you a Valentine's gift.
Luce laughed.
You don't owe me anything. I just want to be with you.
Ah, but I received your gift.
My gift?
She looked up, surprised.
And it touched me to my core.
He reached out and took her hand.
I should apologize if I have ever made you wonder about my affections. Until just yesterday, I didn't think I would be able to meet you here tonight.
A crow cawed, soaring overhead and landing on a wobbly branch above them.
But then a messenger arrived and gave all the knights in my care strict instructions to attend the fair. I fear I rode my horse to near exhaustion in my haste to find you here tonight. It's just that I have been so eager to repay you for your most thoughtful gift.
But, Daniel, I didn't...
Thank you, Lucinda.
Then he produced a leather sheath that looked like it might hold a dagger. Luce tried not to look too baffled, but she'd never seen it before in her life.
Oh!
She laughed under her breath and fingered the doily in her pocket.
Do you ever get the feeling someone's watching over us?
He smiled and said,
All the time.
Maybe there are guardian angels, Luce murmured jokingly.
Maybe,
Daniel said.
But happily, right now, I think it's just you and me.
He guided her to the left-hand path. They took a few more steps, then turned right and passed a crooked oak tree. In the darkness, Luce could sense a small, circular clearing, where a vast oak tree must have been chopped down. Its stump stood in the center of the clearing, and something had been placed on it, but Luce couldn't see what yet.
Close your eyes,
he told her. And when she did, she sensed the lantern moving away. She heard him rustling around the clearing, and she came very close to peeking, but she managed to hold out, wanting to experience the surprise just the way Daniel had intended it. After a moment, a familiar scent filled Luce's nose. She closed her eyes and inhaled deeply. Something soft, floral, and absolutely unmistakable. Peonies. Still standing with her eyes closed, Luce could see her dreary dorm room back at Sword and Cross, made beautiful by the vase of peonies in her window that Daniel had brought to her at the hospital. She could see the cliff's edge in Tibet, where she'd stepped through to witness Daniel doling out single flowers to her past self in a game that ended too soon. She could almost smell the gazebo in Helston, which teemed with the peony's feathery white blooms.
"Now, open your eyes."
She could hear the smile in Daniel's voice, and when she opened her eyes and saw him standing before the tree stump, decked with a vast bouquet of peonies in a tall, wide copper vase, she covered her mouth and gasped. But that wasn't all. Daniel had threaded peony blossoms through the slender branches. He'd made vases of the pox in all the surrounding trees' stumps. He'd strewn the ground with the peony's delicate, snowy petals. He had woven a wreath for her hair. He'd lit dozens of candles and small, hanging lanterns all around, so that the whole clearing glowed with a magical brilliance. When he stepped forward to place the wreath on Luce's head, she, and her medieval self, nearly melted. Medieval Lucinda didn't recognize the vast array of flowers. She would have no idea how this was possible in February, and she still loved every inch of the surprise. But Lucinda Price knew that the pure white peonies were more than just a Valentine's Day gift. They were the symbol of Daniel Grigori's eternal love. The candlelight flickered on his face. He was smiling, but looked nervous, as if he didn't know whether she liked his gift or not.
"Oh, Daniel!" She raced into his arms. "They're beautiful!"
He swung her in a circle and steadied the wreath on her head.
"They're called peonies, not traditional Valentine's flowers," he said, tossing his head thoughtfully. "But still, they are something of a tradition."
Luce loved that she understood exactly what he meant. "Perhaps we could make them our Valentine's tradition," she suggested. Daniel plucked a large blossom from the bouquet and slipped it between her fingers, holding it close to her heart. How many times across history had he done the exact same thing? Luce could see a glimmer in his eyes that suggested it never got old.
"Yes, our very own Valentine's tradition," he mused. "Peonies and, well, there ought to be something else, oughtn't there?"
"Peonies and..."
Luce racked her brain. She didn't need anything else, didn't need anything but Daniel. "And, well,
how about peonies and a kiss?"
"That's a very, very good idea."
Then he kissed her, his lips diving toward hers with unsurpassed desire. The kiss felt wild and new and exploratory, as if they'd never kissed before. Daniel was lost in the kiss, fingers woven through her hair, his breath hot on her neck, as his lips explored her earlobes and her collarbone, the low cut of her dress. Neither of them could get enough air, but they refused to stop kissing. An itch of heat crept up Luce's neck, and her pulse began to race. Was it happening? She would die of love, right here, in the middle of this glowing white forest. She didn't want to leave Daniel, didn't want to be cast into the sky, into another black hole, with only Bill for a companion. Damn this curse. Why was she bound to it? Why couldn't she break free? Tears of frustration welled in her eyes. She pulled away from Daniel's lips, pressing her forehead to his and breathing hard, waiting for fire to sear her soul and take this body's life. Only, when she stopped kissing Daniel, the heat faded, like a pot being lifted off a fire. She flew to his lips again. The heat bloomed through her like a rose in summer. But something was different. This was not the all-consuming flame that extinguished her, that had exiled her from past bodies and sent whole theaters up in smoke. This was the warm, dazzling ecstasy of kissing someone you truly loved, someone you were meant to be with forever. And for now. Daniel watched her nervously, sensing that something important had happened inside her.
Is anything the matter?
There was so much to say. 1,000 questions jockeyed for the tip of her tongue, but then a gruff voice jarred her imagination.
The only Valentine's Day you kids ever got to spend together.
How was that possible? So much love had passed between them, and yet they'd never before spent, or would never again spend, the most famously romantic day of the year in each other's arms. Yet here they were, stuck in a moment between past and future, bittersweet and precious, confusing and strange, and incredibly alive. Luce didn't want to screw this up. Maybe Bill and the kind young clergyman and her dear friend Laura were each right in their own way. Maybe it was sweet enough just to be in love. "Nothing's wrong. Just kiss me, and kiss me again and again." Daniel lifted her off the ground and held her cradled in his arms. His lips were like honey. She wrapped her arms around the back of his neck. His hands traced the small of her back. Luce could barely breathe. She was overcome with love. In the distance, church bells rang. They would be drawing from Cupid's urn now, boys' hands randomly selecting their sweethearts, girls' cheeks red with anticipation, everyone hoping for a kiss. Luce closed her eyes and wished that every couple on the green, that every couple in the world, could share a kiss as sweet as this one.
Happy Valentine's Day, Lucinda.
Happy Valentine's Day, Daniel. Here's to many, many more. He gave her a warm, hopeful look and nodded.
I promise.
Epilogue. The Guardians. Back on the green, four troubadours completed their last song and exited the stage to make room for the presentation of Cupid's urn. As all the tittering single young men and women pressed excitedly up to the platform, the troubadour sneaked off to the side. One by one, they raised their masks. Shelby tossed down her recorder. Miles strummed one more chord on his lyre, for good measure, and Roland harmonized on his fretted lute. Arian slipped her oboe into its slender wooden case and went to help herself to a big mug of punch. But she winced as she tossed it back and pressed a hand to the bloody cloth dressing the new wound on her neck.
"You jammed pretty well out there, Miles," Roland said. "You must have played the lyre somewhere before."
"First time," Miles said nonchalantly,
though it was clear he was pleased by the compliment. He glanced at Shelby and squeezed her hand.
"I probably just sounded good because of Shal's accompaniment."
Shelby started to roll her eyes, but she only got halfway there before she gave up and leaned in to peck Miles softly on the lips.
"Yeah, probably."
"Roland?" Arian asked suddenly, spinning around to scan the green. "What happened to Daniel and Lucinda? A moment ago they were right over there."
"Oh," she clapped her forehead. "Can nothing go right for love?"
"We just saw them dancing," Miles said. "I'm sure they're okay. They're together."
"I told Daniel expressly, spin Lucinda into the center of the green where we can see you. It's as if he still doesn't know how much work goes into this."
"I guess he had other plans," Roland said broodingly. "Love sometimes does."
"You guys, relax."
Shelby's voice steadied the others, as if her new love had bolstered her faith in the world. "I saw Daniel lead her into the forest that-a-way."
"Stop,"
she cried, tugging on Arian's black cloak.
"Don't follow them. Don't you think, after everything, they deserve some time alone?"
"Alone?" Arian asked, letting out a heavy sigh.
"Alone."
Roland came to stand next to Arian, draping an arm around her, careful to avoid her injured neck.
"Yes," Miles said, his fingers threaded through Shelby's. "They deserve some time alone."
And in that moment, under the stars, a simple understanding passed among the four. Sometimes love needed a lift from its guardian angels to get its feet off the ground. But once it made its first early beats toward flight, it had to be trusted to take wing on its own and soar past the highest conceivable heights into the heavens and beyond. This is Justine Eyre. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Fallen in Love, a Fallen Novel in Stories, by Lauren Kate. This program was produced by Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2012 by Tinderbox Books, LLC, and Lauren Kate. Production copyright 2012, Random House, Inc.